my opening line at these shows, by the way, three shows sold out, not important, standing ovations at each show, but who's counting? I'm not counting anything. But my opening line is, it is so good to be home with my fellow genocidal apartheid colonizers. And everyone laughs and cheers because they are fed up with Jews genociding people. That's not what we do. If we wanted to commit a genocide, we would do it in about a half hour.
Shalom from Jerusalem, and welcome back to another episode of the Corinth Podcast. And today we are going to be joined by comedian, television actor, writer, and producer, the hilarious Ilon Gold, who is going to be teaching his Torah al regel achat while standing on one leg. So, without further ado, we let Ilon do the talking today. So, here is our conversation with Ilon Gold teaching us the Torah al regel achat.
We are very, very excited to be joined by Ilon Gold, the one of two very famous Jewish Ilons at the moment working to...
That's so funny. That's Ilon.
It's Ilon, but it's spelled the same
Ilon
way.
Ilon Levy?
Yeah.
It's E-Y-L-O-N.
Yeah, Ilon.
E-L-O-N. Oh, so I'm an idiot. Okay, fine.
I thought you were saying Musk for a second.
Oh, Musk. I was going to say...
He's the real famous Ilon.
Oh, we didn't even think about him.
Yeah, by the way, no matter how well I do in show business, I will always be the poor Ilon. Because I'll never do that well. No one in entertainment has ever made... What is it, 300 billion he's up to now? Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, but I'm doing okay. I have like at least 3 or 4 billion.
Okay. Well, you know, it's better than neither of us.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're very excited to be joined by Ilon.
Thank you. Good to be here. Big fan of yours. Yours personally, but what you do here.
Sure. Well,
and also a little bit of yours.
Collectively.
We are correct.
By the way, I must tell my story after you do your little intro here of my relationship with Corin going back, I don't know, over a decade, and an interesting story that happened.
Well, now I'm fascinated. So that's
here in Israel after a show. Go ahead.
Let's move on. Yeah.
You better stay tuned, people.
So, Ilon Gold, can you teach us the whole Torah standing on one leg?
Absolutely. As long as I don't have to actually physically get up.
We'll excuse you this time.
Our listeners won't know either way.
Standing on one leg the entire Torah. Well, Hillel famously said, we know what he said, which is, you know, treat the others as you would want to be treated. And that is the whole Torah, and everything else is commentary. I'm with him on that. There's also, I'm standing on one leg. How many words do I get?
It depends how good you are at Pilates.
I think it's a combination of emuna, just faith and belief that God is real, that the Torah is real, and that we have this book of instructions like any toy you get as a kid. You don't know how to put it together. You don't know what to do with it. You don't know how to work it. It's literally just the book of instructions of how to live life. And I think without it, people are lost. And most people in the world who are really lost, they have no spirituality, let alone religion or whatever. They have no faith. They, you know, and I can't relate to that. But it's, you know, it's tikkun olam. It's all those good things. It's just repair the world, or, you know, heal. That's what we're put on this planet to do, right? Fix things. By the way, we're put on this planet to fix the world, but let's be honest, Jews really can't fix anything. We got to call the goyim to come to our house to fix it for us. The fridge, the air conditioning's broke, and yet we're supposed to repair the world. Now all of a sudden, we're the world's repairmen. Nothing on that, Larry? I have a friend here, and he usually laughs when I say something funny. We're supposed to repair the world. Really? Jews? Fix it, men? Come on. What next? What are we, plumbers also? By the way, there are a lot of Jewish plumbers. You know, it's a good business. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. Is that a good answer? Tikkun olam, emuna, treating people well. What do other people say when they come in here in this hot seat? I feel like I'm being interrogated by the Mossad over here.
Maybe you are.
Yeah.
What other people say? I mean, we have...
What are the varied answers that you've had answers. From what to what?
I mean, I think very few people are keen to argue with Hillel. But we've had lots of wonderful answers ranging from things like Tikkun Olam and doing unto others,
right?
To having faith. I think one was to don't be a spectator.
Don't be a spectator, be a participant,
yeah.
And also be productive. You know, like the whole thing, we're in the middle of this war here. We're here in Israel, there's a war going on. People say to me, oh, well, you're going to go to Israel in the middle of the war. I'm like, you don't really feel it at the Orient Hotel. But, you know, although when you go to the omelet station, it is a bit of a war zone over there. But the whole thing about the differences of the two sides, you know, and we'll just say even Hamas versus Israelis, they're all about destruction. They're all about just death and terror and tearing down and destruction. And we're all about building, and everything from building bridges, which we try to do with all of our neighbors. We even try to do it with Hamas. We try to do it, you know, all we want to do is build, but also be productive. Like, do not only good, but do something other than try to destroy. And my whole issue with the anti-Israel movement is, and I always say there's no nobility in the anti-Israel movement. You think you're being noble about, oh, you're protecting the Palestinians. You don't give a darn about the Palestinians, because otherwise you'd be talking about the Palestinians in Jordan and in Egypt. And you'd, you know, you'd be talking about Syrians who are half a million killed. You just care about vilifying and demonizing Israel. But the difference is there are one group of people who, again, made the desert bloom, who just want to be and be productive and to build, and then another group that just wants to tear down. So if you're on the other side, you're on the side of destruction. What are the, look at the two rallies. Anytime there's a pro-Israel rally, it's Am Yisrael Chai. It's not death to the Palestinians. It's not even death to Hamas, which it should be. We should be chanting death to Hamas, but our rallies are light. Theirs are darkness. Theirs are about destroying. Ours are about, you know, building. And, you know, any cynical person or some anti-Israel dummy listening to this go, oh, you're destroying Gaza. No. But we don't want to destroy. We got out of Gaza. We wanted Gaza to flourish. We got out of there to give them a chance to have their own state and to make, like they all say, the Singapore of the Middle East. And now this is just war we didn't want to start. So that's the point. It's like, just be productive. And the last thing I'll say on this topic is, someone just told me you just got out of Gaza. In almost every home in Gaza, there's a photo album. And, you know, you go to some normal person's house, a photo album is of a family event, a bar mitzvah or a wedding, or this is a photo album. So many, not all obviously, but so many in Gaza, their photo albums and their pride is their children or their fathers, whatever, with the Kalashnikov rifles, with the Hamas bands on their head, with the, yeah, we're going to commit jihad. And that's their source of pride. Your pride is to murder and to destroy. Because, you know, again, the hater will say, well, Israel's destroying and Israel's killing. Like, no, we don't want to. All we want to do is live in peace and coexistence. And if you don't get that, if you don't get that, yeah, it's complicated and there's so many, you know, every period of history through all the wars, you know, there are complicated things. Like, for example, the 67 war, people go, oh, Israel started that. No, Israel didn't start it. It was a preemptive strike because they knew the war was imminent. What was it, like a day later they were going to attack? So, yeah, there are complexities and you have to look at the big picture. But overall, when you macro it, you see good versus evil. You see Hamas and what they do and what they're capable of doing and what they talk about doing every day. And then you see Israel that just wants to defend. There's a reason it's called the Israeli Defense Forces. They just want to defend. They don't want to kill. They don't want to destroy buildings. They want to leave Gaza alone and leave. Just you guys build and do your thing and flourish and live life and we'll flourish. But no, one side won't allow that. Anyway, that's that for that for now.
So yeah, I want to hear more about your trip here. But I guess taking a step back before that, looking at your Torah on one leg, that idea of building, of tikkun olam, of being productive, how did that get you here to where you are today in terms of your life, your career, the choices you made?
Well, it's just like, you know, on October 8th, I was like, I got to go there. I got to go there, but I'm the last thing they need right now, because really all I can provide is laughs and support. And there's no laughing, you know, first few weeks. I canceled gigs. I couldn't be funny. I just couldn't do it. And I didn't think audiences would be able to laugh. How could you laugh at this time? Everything was so raw and horrific. So, but then time went by and life must continue. You know, the cliche is, or the terrorists win. Well, life doesn't continue for so many, for the hostage families, for so many people, for those that were lost. And it doesn't just continue. But for everyone else, life must continue. And part of life is laughing and eating and sleeping and just being, trying to live your life. So I said, I can't go now because I can't do comedy. I cannot literally emotionally or physically be funny. And I don't think an audience can. And then 3 weeks in, I got a call from Jewish Federation. I was doing a gig for them that was planned months before. And I'm like, are you calling to cancel? Because a bunch of gigs canceled. Like, we can't have comedy at this time. Like, I agree. And I can't do comedy. And he called to say, so we want you to MC it still. I'm like, still? You really want me? Okay, so I'll just do it straight. Because I just did this other event for Bulletproof Israel where I just MC'd it straight. I even cried up there. It was like a week after. And I told them, I'll come and MC your event to raise money for helmets and everything. By the way, that's another story where I don't know why we need to send helmets. Don't you guys have enough helmets here? It is insane that we are, well, they were not prepared for this. Oh, are we not aware that we're surrounded by enemies? Did we not look at 48 and 67 and 73 and go, hey, we should be ready with helmets? I don't know why everyone was sending helmets in the first week. I appreciate it and love that, but I don't know why it was needed. That's another story. But anyway, I go there and I do this benefit and I'm just totally straight. I'm just making intros and then they go, I'll just do it. And he goes, no, we want you to be funny. I go, I don't think I can be funny. I cannot smile, let alone laugh or be goofy. And I don't think people are ready. He goes, I'm telling you, we need you to be funny. They need this. So it was the first time, and just to go up on stage, you know, and the first thing I said was, listen, I'm well aware of what we're all going through right now, especially in Israel. And, you know, you start with like some sweet, you know, even just an Am Yisrael Chai. And then I said, but we do need to take a pause for a minute to have a drink, to have a nosh, to have a laugh, and then we'll get back to crying and get back to the horror show that is our new reality. And by the way, then I did 15 minutes and it was just, they were laughing. I was having a good time and it was a beautiful break. And then you went home and, you know, you cried. But I had to come back.
You're doing that. Are you finding comedy like in the situation?
Or do absolutely.
You feel like it's like a separate thing entirely?
No, I'm making a lot of my comedy now about what's going on, but it's about mocking the haters, about making fun of all of the, you know, false narratives and the names that we're being, like my opening line at these shows, by the way, 3 shows sold out, not important, standing ovations at each show, but who's counting? I'm not counting anything. But my opening line is, it is so good to be home with my fellow genocidal apartheid colonizers. And everyone laughs and cheers because they are fed up with Jews genociding people. That's not what we do. If we wanted to commit a genocide, we would do it in about a half hour. I think it would take 20 to 30 minutes, genocide done. But we don't want to. We're surgical and strategic so that we can save lives. We're losing our young men because we're trying to avoid their young men and women and children. But we get accused of colonizers. And then, you know, my joke, I say, the only place Jews ever colonized was the Catskills. We're bungalow colonizers. Other than that, this is a decolonization project. I don't know if you heard about the British and their colonizing. We decolonized. So that's where the jokes come. The jokes would never be on hostages or on, you know, soldiers getting killed. There's nothing funny. I've never made a Holocaust joke in my life. There's nothing funny there. But I will make a joke about Nazis and make fun of them. Just like Mel Brooks said. Mel Brooks said, my only weapon against Nazis is to, you know, make fun of them, ridicule them with humor and jokes. That's what I could do. So yeah, I will make fun of Nazis. I have this great long bit about how when Angela Merkel, the former, she's not anymore, right?
Right, former.
Right, of Germany, she went to visit Yad Vashem. And it's a whole back and forth about how awkward the conversation between her and her chief of staff was when they went over the itinerary. You know, it's like, oh, we will go visit the prime minister. And she's like, and then what? Well, then we will go to, you know, we have to go visit the Holocaust Museum. I'm sorry, the what? The Hollywood Museum? No, not the Hollywood Museum. Although, like that one, this one is also run by the Jews. no, we're going to the Holocaust Museum. Oh. You know, and then it just goes on. It's this whole long bit about this back and forth. I will make fun of what a conversation is like, you know, on their way to Israel visiting the museum. I'll do museum jokes. I'll do like what Jerry did with the Schindler's List episode. That's hilarious. That's not making fun of people killed in the Holocaust. That's not making fun of the camps. It's making fun of, is it weird to make out in a movie theater that's playing Schindler's List? That's on you. I defended Larry David to Larry David. I said, I can't believe you got any, let's say it's a very religious podcast, baloney, any flack instead of any flack, I said, over your SNL, your Saturday Night Live monologue, because while you were saying something about concentration camps, which again is something I couldn't even bring up, but he did it in a way where he was the punchline and he was sort of the victim, where he said, you know, he's so bad with women. He doesn't know how to, he's so bad with, I can't never imagine trying to pick up women. If I was there, if I was alive and in Europe in the camps, talk about awkward, how, you know, trying to pick up women in the camps. And then I said to him, I go, that joke was on you, that you're so bad with women. Then you put yourself in, what is the most horrific, worst case scenario, everything is heightened times a billion, where you're trying to socialize and meet women. Oh, a concentration camp. So you're using that as a backdrop, which is questionable at all, but at least it's not on the victims. It's on he put himself there and how he would just still be bad. So I said, if the joke is on you, you know, go for it. But, you know, I've heard disgusting Holocaust jokes and I stay away from that. But anyway, I came here. I figured it was the right time where it was like everything's still going on. There's still 136, although great news today about the two. Unbelievable news. What a beautiful story to wake up to. But I knew it was time to give them a break, even for an hour and a half, and just take a moment and sit back and laugh and feel like people are with you. A guy flew in from Los Angeles just to make you laugh for a night, and meeting with soldiers and meeting hostage families. I feel like now was a good time. It's been nice to see a few people like Seinfeld showing up here and Michael Rapaport and Deborah Messing and all that. So, but there needs to be many more. There's way too much silence in Hollywood.
I mean, for a long time, you've been using comedy as a way to combat like the anti-Israel hate and anti-Semitism. And I know that you did the not the anti-Semitic roast, but the anti-Semitism roast.
The roast of anti-Semitism should be coming soon to a streamer near you, yeah.
Fantastic. And that was, what, 6-7 months ago? Before all of this.
Yeah. Anti-Semitism's been around for a bit.
Really?
I think it started, what was it, August? No, it's been around, so yeah.
So when you're here and you're meeting with the soldiers, and I don't know if you've met with the families of the hostages and the people who are here, what's the process of working out a bit to make it, I guess, funny? That mm-hmm. So how do you find the humor in these sorts of places without crossing that line? I guess a follow up to that as well is, how do you, as a comedian, how do you approach the people who sort of say these outrageous, offensive, horrific things and just go, well, it's a joke, as a defense?
Well, I do, by the way, forgive any comedian who says anything. including Holocaust jokes, which I would never personally do. And the reason I forgive that is because it is our job to make light of everything, no matter how dark, no matter how serious. That is our job. There are people who make fun of rape. Do I make rape jokes? No, I would never. It's just so depraved and not funny. But when you're making a joke about something that's dark, it's literally, especially if you're on the right side. Like, for example, the perfect example is I say the N-word in my first special. Now, I could get canceled. I did it 10 years ago before they were canceling everyone. If that was now, and if I was more known, famous, whatever, I would be canceled for saying the N-word in my special. But I said it to make a point that this is a dehumanizing, deplorable word that should never be used. And then whatever the joke was, I'm not going to do it here. Well, no one's listening. Let's do it. No. And if your heart is in the right place and you're making a point, if you're against the N-word, you're against rape, you're against the Holocaust, then jokes are okay if you're against whatever you're talking about, if you're making a point. But if you're just, you know, if you're not on the right side of whatever you're talking about, then whatever, what's the point? So I forget all those guys, Chappelle, you know, the only thing that bothered me about Chappelle's jokes, because he did all this stuff on SNL, and I even tweeted defending those jokes because he was doing the Jews run Hollywood. We've heard those jokes. But he also would say things in between the jokes like, you have to be delusional to believe there's a cabal of Jews. He used the word delusional running Hollywood. But then his joke is, but I do work in Hollywood and there's a lot of Jews. And it's like, okay, there's a lot of Jews, but they're not running it. I mean, first of all, if the Jews, let's just be honest right now here, if the Jews were really running Hollywood, do you think I'd be here doing this podcast? No, I'd be busy. Anyway, as a joke, I'm thrilled to be here. I'm honored to be here. And we got to get to the story, but we're really teeing it up, huh? There might be an episode two. But then he crossed the line with me. And again, it's not that I'm offended because jokes don't offend me. It's that Dave is such a truth teller and comedy is all about truth. And he was lying in his space Jews joke where he gave this analogy about how you were from space, a group of aliens coming from outer space and then taking a land and then treating the people who were indigenous to the land worse than they were ever treated. So much of that is wrong. We're indigenous. We don't treat anyone, you know, worse than we were treated in the Holocaust. And again, it's all self-defense and anything that you see on the news is casualties of wars and tragedies, but not something we want to do. We're put in a position to do. So everything he said was wrong. So what was offensive was the dishonesty and that it wasn't that funny. But again, I still don't get offended. Nothing offends me. It just bothered me that he took that side and fed into the false narrative of us as these, you know, colonizing occupiers and all that. But what was the first part of your question again?
What's the process of
Oh, the process. The process is just anything that's going on, anyone I meet, you know, just even doing a joke like I'm doing these shows for Kobe Mandel Foundation. And, you know, it's a great charity and I thank the people on stage. And then I go, but at the beginning of the show, I go, I do have to make this quick. I'm doing a 10 p.m. benefit for UNRWA, you know, and it's just like everyone knows again, I'm not really doing that, but it's just funny because it's silly and I would never, you know, do a benefit for them. But anyway, so it's the process is just keep thinking and writing and going over stuff and being aware of what's going on in the news. But again, when you tell the truth, when you make a point through jokes, that's the best point because you're so busy laughing that you don't realize you're being taught something. Like you're literally, it's going into your brain and you're being educated and yet you're laughing, but then later it'll resonate and you'll say, oh, I didn't think of it that way. I guess he's right. If you can prove your points with comedy, that's the best. That's just the best.
Have you seen that? Have you found that? Have you had people respond to you, send messages or come to speak to you afterwards? Be like, hey, I actually thought about that differently now.
Yeah, in a positive and negative way. I mean, I'm getting hate DMs, you know, I just saw today again. You're the occupier. You're excusing genocide, and then I have to just spend my precious time, especially here in Israel, defending Israel against these absurd allegations. And I explain the difference between genocide and casualties of war. Again, all of which are tragic and unavoidable. And every single death on both sides, Hamas is solely responsible for. But, you know, when you're explaining all this to them, what I realize is, I'm about to give up, by the way, not doing comedy. I'm about to give up with the DMing and the one by one individual, because they don't hear you. They don't understand you. And like one of the guys just literally DM'd me, he goes, "We Arabs welcomed you Jews into all of our countries and treated you so well." I go, "Are you aware that Jews were expelled and murdered out of every single Arab and Eastern European and European country, and expelled and murdered? That was you treating us well? And now we have this one place that actually we are attached to and indigenous to by every measure of in what's the word?
Indigenuity.
Is it indigenuity or indigenousness?
It's definitely not indigenousness.
Oh, okay, I've got a lot of things.
Like by every measure. And yet they're trying to kick us out of there too. So don't tell me that you were good to our people over the years. And again, but it's such a waste of time. These one, you try to convert everyone, but there's a few billion people out there that are completely misguided, that you know, to be against Israel, you're either truly ignorant or truly hateful. There's no in between. You either don't get it. You don't know history. You don't know reality. You don't know facts. Or you just hate so much, you're blinded by the hatred. You're just bigoted and prejudiced against Jews and the Jewish state. I mean, that's so clearly what's happening in the world. It's always a blood libel that the world needs to glom onto to start attacking Jews. They killed Jesus. Oh my God, let's kill them. But that's a blood libel. That's not true. They're drinking the blood of Christian babies. Oh my God, they're putting in the matzah? All right, let's go kill them. And now it's Palestinian children are being killed by Jews. And it's like, okay, first of all, again, you cannot compare casualties of war. Second of all, what do you mean by Jews? There's a army in one tiny dot in the earth that is acting to rescue hostages and defend its country from October 7th happening every day as they promised it would. That has nothing to do with Jews any more than when America goes into Iraq, Afghanistan, anywhere, and then you're going to an American on the street and going, "You're killing babies in Afghanistan." Like, me? I'm a guy going to work. That's the American army that I have. Maybe I didn't even vote for this president that made the directive to go in into Iraq and whatever. And why are you just, you know, blaming all people for the actions of a small army that's, again, just defending themselves? But even if they were wrong, let's say the IDF was wrong in their actions, what does that have to do with Jews in London and Jews in LA? Why are you attacking us? We have nothing to do with that any more than any Americans have to do with the actions of the United States military.
How does that work then? And the flip side, you have Jewish communities in all the places you mentioned who, you know, October 8th straight away were sending helmets to soldiers and raising money. And how do you bridge those two things together? Where on the one hand, you're saying, well, this is not to do with Jews. But on the other hand, obviously and naturally, almost every Jew in the world woke up that morning and were like, we have to do something right now about this.
Right. Well, listen, there's making everyone complicit in a negative way, where it's like, any Jew I see, I'm gonna attack because they're a part of Israel and they're probably sending helmets and they're probably helping the Israeli army. And then there's the common sense side that would just see that, well, you know, if these, well, you just can't say that. But again, a normal person would say, well, I understand why some in the Jewish community would support a country that just had 1,200 murdered and 300 whatever. How many was the original number of hostages? 246 or something. I understand why they're trying to help. But again, you as the hater, you as the attacker, you don't know if this Jew gives a crap about Israel or not. And you're just, again, lumping us all together. So, you know, a hater doesn't, just like Hamas doesn't come here and go, oh, he was a peacenik. She used to bring Palestinians into Israel to treat them in the hospitals. They just kill. So it doesn't even matter. I mean, it's a fair question what you're asking, but it's like, they do see us all as complicit and all supportive of Israel when there are many Jews that are sadly not. But yeah, listen, there are no right answers to any of these questions, but it's definitely, we're definitely experiencing this level of hatred that we haven't seen in a while. And I was just thinking how my teenage kids, who were so innocent up until October 7th, now are living in a world where they know, they're so hyper aware that the world hates them and also wants them dead, which is even crazier. When they see the gas, the Jews in Australia, they see all these videos, like, that's so crazy. See, there's two generations, my parents and my kids. My parents knew that the world wanted us dead because they saw my father's father's two brothers, two sisters, mother and father, murdered in the Holocaust. So my father was very aware they want us dead, and when they say they want us dead, they will kill us. I was brought up with no anti-Semitism. Like, the level of anti-Semitism that I experienced was like, hey, Jew bastard, you know, in the Bronx. It's like, all right, he's just an idiot. It's like, hey, fatso. He doesn't hate fat people. He just wants to name, he's a big bully, stupid idiot, going, hey, Jew. I've gotten that every now and then, but I didn't know everyone wants me dead. So my parents knew, and now my kids know. And it's like unbelievable to me that they lost their innocence and they're so hyper aware. And they've gotten like, they're not like angry kids or like the sweetest kids, but they've gotten angrier now. And they're all on social media and just fighting back and trying to do what I do, like just, you know, refuting and, you know, putting up the good fight online. But do you want to hear the greatest story ever?
Of course.
It's about this publishing.
Okay.
Corin.
Oh, wow. This is the story.
Corin, which, by the way, how many Koran jokes do you get here?
And Korean. Oh, Korean translation of the Koran.
Korean translation of the Koran. There couldn't have been a better name.
You haven't been brave enough yet to do a press release on the Korin Koran for Purim.
That would be nice. A Korin Koran.
Now you spoiled it. We had it planned.
I'm not
sure. It's
very confusing when they ask you to do, you know. Listen, hey, by the way, I love the Koran. You know, the Koran says that Israel belongs to the Jewish people. I'm all for the Koran, right?
Yeah.
Does it not say that?
I'm not going to argue with it.
I'm not holding.
Pretty sure it says that. I'm also pretty sure that Jerusalem isn't mentioned there, but it's mentioned, what, 800 times in our liturgy? All right. But anyway, here's the point. So I come off stage. This is over 10 years ago. Wait, it's exactly 10 years ago, because it had been 30 years since I was in Israel, because I went for my bar mitzvah when I was 13, and then 30 years later, I went for my son's bar mitzvah. Why didn't I go to Israel in between, you ask? Can't afford it. Oh my God, these El Al prices, these hotels are nuts. I always wanted to go to Israel, but I just had little kids, and then it really was an expense that I couldn't. And you know, it's funny you ask about, what about all the Jews that are helping Israel? I hate to admit it, but I was one of those Jews until I hit around 30, my age, that I didn't really, I don't want to say I didn't care about Israel, but it was not my focus. It wasn't in my mind, in my prayers, you know, any more than what's in the Siddur. But I, you know, right now I'm obsessed with praying for Israel and the IDF and hostages. But like, I was 30 and it just wasn't a thought. My mother was born here. I was like, okay, that's nice. And it wasn't a thought any more than like my black friends think about Africa all the time. They don't. They're from Brooklyn. They don't think about Africa. And I don't think about Israel. And didn't really, really care about Israel. And then all of a sudden, the first intifada happened. I just started seeing stories. Like, why are they blowing up buses and pizza stores? What is going on? It looks like a slow Holocaust to me. What reason could you have for going in and blowing up a pizza place and a bus? And then I did a deep dive and became obsessed with Israel and the truth and finding out, what is the truth of this conflict? And then when you realize what the truth is, all I care about is Israel now. And for the last 20 something years, it's all I care about is Israel. But in my 20s, did I care about Israel? No, I did not care. Anyway, so then I come back to Israel and I'm 43, my son's 13, and I go on stage. It was the first time back and my first time ever performing in Israel, which is a big deal. And I literally got emotional. I cried on stage saying how it's so good to be performing with my people in our homeland. And I got so emotional, I cried. And then I did this bit about the Talmud, And again, my bits about when it comes to making jokes about like Judaism, our rituals, our customs, or anything, I never make fun, I poke fun. And making fun is like when you're like, you're just mocking something, and it's more, you're an outsider and you're looking at something and you're mocking it and you're making fun. Poking fun as an insider is different because you're just finding the funny in whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And, but it's still with like, listen, I learn Gemara. I learn Talmud. I always love Talmud. And, but I will make fun of the intricacies and the debates and the just the minutiae and how insane it gets at times. That's just, I have to make
steady flow of material.
Steady flow. My Christmas tree bit, it was a famous bit about, that was very Talmudic. And this was another bit before the Christmas tree bit, specifically about the Talmud. And these two lovely ladies came over to me after the show and they said, we're from Koran Publishing. I went to Koran? They said, no, Koran Publishing. And we love your Talmud bit so much that we want to gift you sort of a book of the month club. We're still printing the Shas, the entire set, but we have a bunch that are done. And then every month we're going to finish it and send it to you. I'm like, no, you're not. Oh yes, we will. And what's this going to cost me? Nothing. Which is just, you know, that's heaven on earth when nothing costs, something costs nothing. Right. I'm feeding into stereotypes now. Anyway, so I was like, this is amazing. Just because of one bit that I did, this, it was inspiring. And we love that you're talking about the Talmud and we see how you talk about it with love. And even though they're jokes, you know, you see your love for the Talmud. We want you to get our, every month for years, I would get this giant book. And now I have a whole shelf of the complete Shas. You finished, I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I stopped getting it. When did you stop?
Just before COVID.
Yeah. What a great story that is, huh?
Yeah.
I want to hear another story about Talmuds. Remember the Sansino Talmud?
Yeah.
So when I was getting bar mitzvah, I remember my grandmother, my bubby, asked me, what do you want for your bar mitzvah? And I was really fascinated with Talmud. And but I also loved the drums. And I was like, ooh, I want a drum set. I think I want a drum set. And then I realized I live in an apartment in the Bronx, and I don't think my upstairs or downstairs neighbor would appreciate all the banging. And also I went, but there's something about getting a Talmud for your bar mitzvah that's more meaningful than a stupid drum set. So I opted for the Talmud. I got the Sansino, the full Shas from my grandmother. Didn't get a drum set till 3 years ago in my house, right before COVID. It was perfect because then all I did was like play drums. Right. But that's like my story with the Talmud goes back, and I've always, and then I got the Schottenstein edition. And then who would have thought that I would then be doing Jay Schottenstein, who's like the most amazing philanthropist, literally his name's on the, I'd be doing his 60th birthday party. I was like, I used to get by your Gemaras and read, and now I'm performing for you. It's crazy. And then he just took me last Tuesday to bear witness in the South, which was very special with him and his wife and his kids. And that was a very special thing. So I have a long history, me and the Talmud, but you guys are a big part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
I think just before we wrap up, we've got a couple of minutes left.
Sure.
You spoke about sort of the difficulty of defending Israel and sort of being in the public eye and so vocally pro-Israel and pro-Jewish. Mm-hmm. Can you share with us maybe just a success story? Well, a time that, you know, either you have changed someone's mind if that's ever happened.
Perfect,
or just,
yeah, you know, the perfect example of there was this comedian who's pretty well known. She's pretty famous, like has specials on Netflix and like she's known. We'll leave her name out of it because who wants to give her the publicity? And she put out again a blood libel that the IDF is spraying white phosphorus gas, which is like literally the ultimate war crime, which is literally like just attacking and murdering civilians, which is the antithesis of truth and how the IDF operates. And I DM'd her. It was 3 hours on a Friday afternoon, back and forth, explaining to her that this is a blood libel. So it's not just a lie. You're not just telling something that's not true. That's fine. You're telling a blood libel, which means it's a lie that will cause blood to spill. You are going to cause, listen, if I read that, I don't know how I wouldn't attack the people that are just spraying a people with white phosphorus. I get that anger. And so I said, you have to take this down because it's not true, and you are going to have Jewish blood on your hands. Jewish blood will be spilled because the people who read this, it incites them and it emboldens them to go, if they're killing people, I'm going to go kill them. You must take this down. 3 hours later, she took it down. That being said, the next day it was another blood libel and another thing and another post, another thing, and you can't stop these nutballs. But I would then just like, I just kept DMing her going, you're doing more damage, you're causing more Jews to get attacked, you're da-da-da. But, you know, these people are, they're possessed. They're possessed and obsessed. They're obsessed with Israel as if Gaza's the only place on earth where there's people suffering. It's like the only cause that anyone is speaking up against. They don't talk about Assad actually committing genocide against 500,000 Syrians. They don't talk about Ukraine anymore. Oh, what happened to Ukraine? It's a, you know, oh, it's the Gazans. I was like, I wonder why they care about the Gazans so much. Well, I'll leave you two to figure that out.
We'll do that.
Thank you. This is Larry, my gynecologist. By the way, he's a gynecologist. That's true. He's not necessarily my gynecologist, but he's my good friend, and he's a gynecologist. But it's true. It is a lot of the mainstream media, but it's also the people's willingness to, again, accept anything that can enrage them against Jews. Like, give me something. They're waiting. They're like, you know, they're like the, it's like the shark in the water, just waiting to bite and take, you know, and it's like the second that a little fish comes by, they're just waiting to attack. They're not sitting back and going, eh, the Jews are, they're just like, oh, the Jews, what are they doing next? What are they doing? Oh, pedophiles, what is it? Give me something. Oh, Epstein, you know, and then you get one bad Jew and, oh, they're all pedophiles. It's like they're waiting for everything. Speaking of waiting, we should be waiting for our car.
You should be. Thank you so much, Adam, for joining us. Okay. On the Ground Podcast. I think just to wrap up, I guess, you know, the best way to annoy them is to keep laughing, keep smiling, keep making people laugh as well.
And that's the best way also to get your point across. It's like, make your points through comedy and also, yeah, and then heal. But we're back to tikkun. I am healing with my little jokes and people are really healing from feeling good and having a respite and a moment of laughter and just enjoying themselves for a minute. So that's the healing I could do. I don't do much, believe me, but that's my little part.
Yeah, but it definitely makes all the difference.
Thank you.
So thank you for joining us. People can find you.
Follow me on Instagram.
Definitely do.
Okay.
Elon Musk. One of them is funnier than the other. We'll definitely try and have you back again soon.
I would love to. Then,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Quarant Podcast. Thank you so much, Elon Gold, again for joining us in the studio in the Quarant offices in Jerusalem for this episode and teaching us his Torah, Al Regalachat. It's probably too late by the time you listen to this to order your books in time for Purim, but it's never too early to order your Haggadot for Pesach, and you can get 10% off your order using promo code PODCAST at checkout. You can reach us on all the socials as well as by email at podcast@korinpub.com, and we will see you next time on the Korin Podcast.